Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Tulsa Ballet season kicks off with Creations in Studio K this week at the Tulsa Ballet headquarters with three new works to the company, two of which are world premieres. The company will feature three resident choreographers from around the country. Tulsa Ballet's Ma Kong, who will debut his Flight of Fancy, Alejandro Cerruto, Hubbard Street Dance Company's resident choreographer with Second to Last, and Nicolo Fonte, resident choreographer of both Ballet West in Salt Lake City and Oregon Dance Theater, has created a new work titled Love Notes, set to the recordings of Nina Simone, and he's my guest today. Fonte was a dance colleague of Tulsa Ballet artistic director Marcello Angelini at Le Grand Ballet Canadien in Montreal, was later part of Nacho Duato's National Company in Madrid. As a choreographer, he's created numerous ballets for some of the most innovative companies in the world. He's had long associations with Aspen Santa Fe Ballet, Gothenburg Ballet in Sweden, and Tulsa Ballet, along with his resident duties. This is his fourth collaboration with the company here in Tulsa. He previously staged his Bolero, Inside the Figures, and premiered Axis Mundi in 2013. He'll be one of three choreographers featured in Creations in Studio K, which opens Friday night, September 16th, at the Studio K Theater at the Tulsa Ballet headquarters, with performances through Sunday this week and the 22nd through the 25th next week. Nicolo Fonte, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you. Good to be here.
This is what, your fourth or fifth collaboration?
Fourth. It's my fourth collaboration with Tulsa Ballet. Yeah.
When you go into a collaboration with a company like that, I assume you're taking everything you've seen before, although dancers change from year to year. What adds to the way you're able to put together a piece by knowing the dancers a little better?
Well, I think simply the way you put it, knowing them actually makes the whole creative process and the process of generating a new work that much easier. This group in particular, the dancers that I cast in this new work of mine, mostly all of them, 95%, maybe it's one dancer that's new, were all in the last two pieces that I had done on Tulsa Ballet. So this is really a kind of sort of furthering and deepening the relationship that I have with those particular dancers. So it makes the process a lot easier because it's not like I have to start from zero teaching the dancers stylistically what I'm looking for, any kind of nuance. So it's an interesting process to go through with dancers that you know and that you know well, because they can start to really understand you on a physical level, but also on a sort of emotional / intellectual level. And they start generating material, not steps so much, but material in the sense of like they can kind of hear what you're saying and manifest it in a physical way, which is really interesting.
And probably add a little something.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's way more interesting, I think, for them. No one's ever actually came out and said, oh, that's really interesting. But I would think that it would be more interesting for them as, you know, real participants in the creative process, that they're not just being told what to do. They're actively participating, not only as interpreters, but as partial creators of the whole work, which is sort of very, very interesting. And it's interesting for me, too, to see that. I don't have a problem ever to say no, like, no, don't do that. But it's interesting to allow for a lot of creative freedom in the studio and see where it goes, you know?
Do you find that when you allow that freedom, it's like, wow, this is even better than I imagined a lot of times?
Often yeah. That happens. And I actually tell them. Yeah. I say it right to them that that's better than what I had originally anticipated or planned on or, you know, foresaw. Yeah, so I allow for that, and I love it when that happens, yeah. No. And then I tease them and say, oh, you know, I really don't like it when people have better ideas than me, et cetera, et cetera. But in reality, it's great when that happens, yeah.
Now, also, when you have a company that knows your style, I mean, some choreographers have a more intense, I would call it, vocabulary, if you will, mm-hmm. on the way they like to see their dancers move. Mm-hmm. How important is that to you for them to know your sort of choreographic vocabulary, if you will, or the sort of the way you like to see dancers move?
Oh, that's very important. I mean, it's, you know, it's what I start with. It's what I end with. It's all a lot of the notes and corrections and coaching, you know, is geared towards that. I mean, I think it's also something for me in particular that became very apparent when I started choreographing, you know, 100 years ago, when I was a dancer and I started just moving around, exploring my body, moving in space. And it became clear that I had a particular way of moving and that, you know, and that's something that I've sort of developed as the years have gone on as a choreographer. So it's really important to me for dancers to understand that there's a certain largeness and suppleness that I'm looking for in the movement, and they have to just learn it and get used to it. So this group now, with this latest piece, there was actually very little of that because they understood it already. So the process went really fast, but it also went to a kind of different places that I don't think I could have gone to with another group that hasn't worked with me before. So it's a really interesting way to go.
So let's talk about this new mm-hmm. piece. What was the germ of the idea that began the piece? Was it the music?
Sort of, yeah. I mean, when Marcello commissioned me, you know, he emailed me and first, and then we talked. He said, would you want to do another Studio K Creations? And I was like, sure, I love that. I love the parameters and all that. I mean, I like the idea of that whole thing that he's created here. So the first thing I thought of was the venue. And I thought, okay, this time, why don't I really take advantage of the intimacy of the venue? And I kind of wanted to create a work that I felt maybe we could get the sensation or feeling of being in a nightclub, you know, like, or in a kind of big bar, but still it's a bar, you know? So it has this intimate feeling that, you know, you're sitting around tables really close together. There's some really kind of fabulous singer, and then there's some dancing just kind of bursts out, you know? And
sounds like a musical.
a little bit, yeah. So having that idea and sort of saying, okay, I want to create a work for an intimate venue. So it's almost like site specific in a way, even though it's a traditional stage. And that led me to certain types of music, having that in mind. And I sort of went immediately to all the greats like Aretha Franklin or Dionne Warwick. And I was sort of going in that direction. And I stumbled upon Nina Simone by accident. And it was not someone that I had, you know, in the front of my mind. So I had kind of forgotten about her.
She's almost like a cultish figure in a way.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a Cognosi sort of.
Yeah.
That's a Cognosi play right there.
Yeah. And then. Yeah. Yeah, totally. And when I, you know, started listening to her, I was like, okay, there is absolutely no further research. You know, it's got to be her. It's got to be this music. And then I went through the process of selecting songs. And that was an interesting process for me as well, because I didn't want to use the really, really popular songs because I thought there was so much material to choose from. And I, you know, specifically chose all music from the late 50s and early 60s, so pre-activism. And that's definitely a conscious choice because I wasn't making a political work. But also, in all honesty, and I'm okay saying this publicly, I just think musically what she did earlier on was just a lot better. You know, I wanted really strong music, you know. So I loved her voice is amazing. I mean, you know, it's just bizarre, but amazing. And, you know, then she was a classically trained pianist, and you can hear that in all her music. So that was a really interesting, another sort of parallel idea for the work that, you know, like the dancers at Tulsa Ballet, they're these classically trained dancers, yet we're going to go in a direction that is so not classical that it's actually, we're going to try to tap into raw emotion and kind of do some sort of physical manifestation of her voice without necessarily interpreting the lyrics. So this was all really, really interesting to me to kind of work on, build a ballet based on those elements.
Now, how do you create a physical manifestation of her voice? I mean, she has this great, incredible, distinctive voice.
Yeah. I mean, you know, in her documentary, you know, she says, sometimes I sound like, you know, milk chocolate, and sometimes I sound like gravel. And you know, and I was like, uh-huh. I mean, that's absolutely the truth. I mean, sometimes you can't tell if it's a man or a woman singing.
True.
So I don't know. You have to come and see if I've succeeded at that. I hear music and I respond to it on a visceral, physical level. And so it was an interesting process to me because there were moments when I was like, okay, her voice to me is just another instrument. Mm-hmm. And then there are other moments in the ballet when I thought, I'm going to, in hopefully a more sophisticated way, interpret the lyric a tiny bit. So I do both. And they were choices that I made in the process, you know, to say I'm not going to make an entire ballet based on interpreting the lyric of each song. But I also didn't want to completely negate that aspect of it. So there's a short element in the work that sometimes actually interpret the lyrics.
Now, is there any sort of story element, or is it mostly an abstract ballet that sort of looks at each one of these songs that she does in the course of the piece? You know, maybe interpretation of some lyrics and maybe just abstract notes.
It's a combination of abstraction and some narrative. I mean, it's not a literal narrative in there. I mean, it's not a story ballet at all. You know, I chose love songs. They're all love songs. So, of course, that's hence the title Love Notes, which is a reference to writing love notes to your loved one and literally the notes of a piano. Mm. So it's sort of a play on words there. And there is that element of an expression of sort of the ecstasy of falling in love and then, you know, the tenderness where that might go to later on in life. I mean, there's also, you know, a kind of really playful section that has to do with rejection, but it's done in a playful way.
Now, you're setting this in a sort of a nightclub, or is an implied nightclub sort of...
But not explicit. I mean, it's not explicit. I mean, it's not like there are tables on stage or that kind of thing.
Did you want to go for any sort of noir feel at all?
Not really.
No,
not really. It was just sort of, I mean, it's the way I work. It's the way I make ballets in general. I might have something that's really specific and, you know, concrete. Like you can, if I say nightclub, already you have an image in your mind of what that is. And but then I totally abstract it, you know.
And I'm thinking when I hear that, I also have a sort of image of how the dancers are going to move.
Right.
You know, from film, from, you know, and everything else.
Yeah. There are elements of that in the work, but it's still a ballet. It's still a contemporary ballet. So it's not like I've stripped away all their balleticisms. They're in there. It's also part of who I am as a choreographer. I mean, it's part of my choreographic DNA as well. So I can't just abandon that. And I mean, I wouldn't, and it would feel really foreign to me to suddenly abandon that whole part of my historical upbringing, you know, which is ballet. But at the same time, I wanted it to feel as if you walked into a club and, you know, somebody turned that music on. Somebody says, hey, let's put Nina Simone on in the jukebox. And you would start kind of, you know, feeling the groove and like getting into her voice. And so there is that element of it. And so there is a kind of eccentricity to the movement, which for me was an expression of her voice because her voice is very eccentric to me. And on another element, I've gone to a place as a choreographer where I'm interested in more accessibility in contemporary ballet. And I don't think in any way, shape, or form this is pandering, you know, to the audience, because I think Nina Simone is actually really great music and really sophisticated music, but yet it doesn't alienate anyone. It can be very, very inviting for a non-sophisticated dance goer to come and see. And that's kind of where I'm at today. I'm sort of a little tired of the apocalyptic trends, certain schools of contemporary dance, you know, where it's, you know, heavy industrial music and, you know, it's like the end of the world and we're all detached and really super cool and trendy. And I'm a little tired of that. I'm a little tired of the sort of inhumanity of that. So I was also looking for a way to sort of say, well, there's got to be really high quality human-friendly music out there, you know? There has to be. And so all those sort of elements sort of came together in this one particular work.
In your concerns about the accessibility of it, you know, when I think of like Rooster, you know, that the I mean, to me, that's, you know, they're using the Rolling Stones, but there's no pandering of the material at all.
I've done a work to Janis Joplin and actually Pink Martini in Portland, because I'm a Portland-based choreographer now. And they performed live for my work, which was, you know, and, you know, that piece in particular went to a really dark place, you know, with Pink Martini, you know, it's like, can you imagine? And it was really, really cool. And it sort of introduced that whole audience to a whole different side of them. We were able to really go there. I mean, it wasn't a dark piece, but there were moments in it where we sort of went, let's penetrate the subconscious a little deeper here. And that was really interesting. But, you know, again, it's high quality music. It's not overly produced, commercialized, sort of desensitized music. I mean, it's music. These are musicians. They're actually playing, you know, and they were, you know, Janis Joplin and Nina Simone, you know, they were really relevant in the time that they were alive and making their art, you know. So it's not just hacky music, you know, it's real music. I mean, so I'm interested in that. You know, it's not to say that I'm only going to use vocalists or, you know, singer-songwriters. I also use classical music. But, you know, I've gone away. In the past, I've also been part of that, oh, I really want to use some sort of interesting soundscape that has clanging generator noises and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And I'm like, yeah, that's okay. But I mean, we've also been there, we've done that. And I don't know what that means anymore. And so I'm just saying, for me personally, somehow the bridge between an audience member and what they're seeing on stage in ballet or any dance for that matter is music. I don't think it's even debatable. I'm going to just sort of say that that's the bridge. That's what people, how they connect to what's happening on the stage.
I'm wondering if that whole trend came from the fears of this happening in our society, and now it seems to be more, we're not there yet, but you can see all the signs of technology playing such a huge role in our lives. In fact, you know, conversation comes second to a text. Maybe we are longing now more for human relationships.
Yeah, I'm hoping, and I'm right there, you know, with it. And it's not to say that, you know, the piece doesn't have any darkness or it doesn't have any conflict, you know, because I'm playing sort of love songs. I mean, there is conflict and there is sort of, you know, a dark part, or, you know, it does factor into the emotional content of the work. But, you know, it's not the overall feeling you come away with, you know, and I didn't want it to be. You know, but it doesn't mean, because I'm sort of making work more accessible, that somehow it's not vital or that it's all conflict free or that it's, you know, that's not truth at all. So
my guest today is Niccolo Fonte, one of three choreographers who will be featured in Creations in Studio K for Tulsa Ballet, their opening production of the season. His piece is titled Love Notes, set to the songs of Nina Simone. And it premieres this Friday through Sunday, September 16th through the 18th, with additional performances the 22nd through the 25th. Fonte is a resident choreographer of both Ballet West in Salt Lake City and Oregon Ballet Theater in Portland. He's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Well, earlier you were mentioning, you said you really love this idea of Creations in Studio K. Mm-hmm. And I assume it's because, you have this large stage, yet you only, have couple hundred seats and the audience is right there with the dancers. What is special about creating a piece for that sort of theater?
Well, I mean, in particular, let's talk about this piece in particular. I mean, the venue itself was really the genesis of the work. I mean, I think it's a really great theater to see dance in. I mean, there are limitations. I mean, there's like no flying and stuff like that. I mean, so there are certain limitations, but mostly you have carte blanche. So to really do what you want, that's part of the series, you know, and I really like the way it's the Studio K Creation series. You know, it's set up that, you know, when you come in for your period of creation, it's only you working. So you're working, you know, 6 hours a day for 2 weeks straight through, and you're basically conflict free.
And it'd be like you're doing a full length, except you're doing the one act.
Right. But in 2 weeks, I mean, a full length, that would be very fast. Yeah. So, you know, so that sort of accessibility to any dancer that you want, and, you know, and or you say, I need everybody, then you say, okay, that's fine. I'm going to use the whole company, and the whole company is, you know, accessible to you for that period of time. So it's almost like you kind of get into this groove where they're your dancers, you know, because they're working with you every single day, 6 hours a day, without having necessarily to go rehearse anything else. And so that's a really important part of a creation process. You know, I understand, like, now they're working on the three different ballets, and so, you know, and each choreographer is making different demands on them. But to have that initial period of, you know, intense concentration with one choreographer, I mean, that's really important, I think, to make breakthroughs in the work, you know, to get past hurdles. If they're constantly running around from rehearsal to rehearsal and you never get at least one chunk of time where they're really yours, it's hard to, even for you, you know, to sort of be like, well, you know, let's say you don't have an answer, you don't have a solution to a certain, you know, choreographic block you're having. You know, you need a couple of hours or even a day or two, you know, to overcome that. And you need their input and their help. And it's much harder for the dancers to do that if they're running around from many different rehearsals. So that initial period is really, really important to me. And I'm so glad, you know, that the way Marcello has sort of designed the series, you get that for 2 weeks straight. And that's a really wonderful way to work.
Do you feel like you're further along in the piece than you would be if you were doing a triple bill with where all the dancers are moving around,
like
all the place?
Shared time, yeah.
Yeah, shared time. As you begin the production week? You
know, Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, it's like I'm so relaxed. I'm not even worried about it. I was like, you know, and it's sort of, it's like they look amazing. You know, they look amazing in the work, and the work is a lot of fun and but it has a lot of substance as well, I think. And I'm, you know, I'm really proud of the work that we did together. Because they were real collaborators on the project. So it's really great. And I think, again, this type of work works really, really well in that intimate environment.
Does that limit what you do with this piece down the road if you decide, you know, you want to do it again because it is a small theater?
Well, here's the thing. I mean, I think, and again, I could just be so full of myself that I'm delusional, that I think the piece is intimate but big at the same time. So I really think that the piece would work on a bigger stage in a bigger venue as well. I really do. I think it could work. It works in both kind of worlds. So even though it was designed to be looked at in a kind of, you know, up close kind of venue, I think it would still work in a much larger venue. And maybe that's, you know, due to the dancers themselves, that they're dancing in a way that is so larger than life that I think, you know, we could do it at the Bolshoi and people, you know, would in the top balcony would feel the emotion and the range that the dancers are able to express right now at Tulsa Ballet. It's really been wonderful.
Now, let's talk a little bit about you. You've been at Ballet West for several years, I think four or five seasons.
Actually, 4 years. It's about 4 years.
And now you have Oregon Ballet Theater.
Uh-huh.
So are you creating works for both companies now pretty regularly?
Yes. And it's wonderful. It's really wonderful. And I love that, you know, after, you know, freelancing for X number of years, which is quite a number of years, it's like 15, I think. And to sort of have that kind of stability, to know I'm guaranteed work with these two companies. And then, but it's not only that, it's not only the guarantee of work, it's that now, you know, talking about dancers that know your style and sort of can, you know, almost generate the movements before you even say anything, you know, that's a really wonderful thing. But also what's interesting to me in working with companies that really know you is that, you know, it pushes you to dig deeper and go further, you know. And on a very, you know, base level, you know, I might be saying to myself, oh my gosh, I cannot give them that step again. You know what I mean? They've done it in 3 ballets already. We can't repeat that. So, I mean, that's a very sort of surface kind of level.
Right.
But it's to give you an example where you have to go, okay, I've got to come up with something else. And then just, you know, that initial reaction of saying, I got to come up with something else, you know, really might lead you to some new area that you've never tapped into before in your own work, which is really, really interesting. And I think you're more apt to do that with companies that you're working with on a regular basis.
Do you thrive on that challenge?
Oh, I love it. Yeah. I love it. Yeah. Now I love it. Maybe last year or 2 years ago, I didn't love it. I don't know. But I really love it now. I love to have creative people in the room as well. I mean, I like working with dancers who are starting to choreograph. I'm not intimidated by that. I actually really encourage it. I mean, as long as they're not choreographing during my rehearsal time, you know what I mean? But I like that kind of creative input in the room. Yeah.
Now, your relationship with Marcello, I believe, began when you were both dancing in Montreal.
Yes.
Were you already thinking about choreography at that point?
Yes. As, you know, legend has it, apparently, like both Daniela and Marcello will tell you that, you know, I was always in the back of the room. What I just said, I hope creative dancers don't do it in my rehearsal. Yeah. I was always in other people's rehearsals, standing in the back of the room, kind of like moving around and playing around with movement and feeling how my body would move in space and stuff. And they would come over to me and say, you know, what on earth are you doing? And I would be like, I'm choreographing and one day I'm going to be famous. And they were like, okay, yeah, whatever. And so it's kind of worked out that way. Yeah, I've known them for a long time. And Marcello, I think, is a big supporter of my work. So I really appreciate the opportunities he's given me here in Tulsa Ballet.
Now, with two companies that you're a resident for, yeah, will you still have time to work with other companies?
Yes, yes, yes. And, you know, and but it's also nice to be in a position to say, no, you know, actually, you know, I cannot do that at this moment because I'm already booked with, you know, Oregon Ballet Theater and Ballet West or wherever else I might be going. So it's really a privileged position now to sort of be a little bit pickier and choosier with what I want to do or, you know, what I actually just can or cannot do due to time constraints. And it's also good to be in a position to say, well, I can't create a new work for you, but I might be able to license out an existing work if you're interested, you know, in having me, because then I don't necessarily have to be there the whole period of time. I can send a stager to set the work. Someone else can do the lighting. I could come and do the final touches and stuff, which is much less time consuming.
Now, what comes after Love Notes? I assume you have a big, busy season ahead.
I'm right back to Oregon Ballet Theater, and I have a premiere October 8th in Portland, yeah, and a piece called Giants Before Us to Liszt, Franz Liszt, piano music, very, very beautiful music that's going to be played live on an elevated piano. reference to giants, and there are other sort of references to giants in the piece. It's almost done. I've actually been working on it all summer, so and then I took a break from that to come here, and I go back and do that, and then actually from there, right in October after that, I go to Salt Lake City and start a new ballet for Ballet West that's going to premiere in the spring.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, so a very busy season ahead for you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's a lot coming up. Yeah.
Well, you can see Nicola Fonte's work along with Ma Kong and other choreographers in Creations in Studio K, which opens Friday evening at Studio K at Tulsa Ballet. Nicola, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you.
Nicola Fonte, the resident choreographer of Ballet West in Salt Lake City and Oregon Dance Theater in Portland, Oregon, is one of three choreographers featured in Tulsa Ballet's opening production of the season, Creations in Studio K, which takes place at the Studio K at the Tulsa Ballet headquarters on Peoria. His Love Notes, set to the songs of Nina Simone, premiere Friday evening, September 16th, with additional performances Saturday and Sunday, and the 22nd through the 25th. Details at TulsaBallet.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.